How many people you got to break off in this?
For this show, I've got, and this is crazy, it's the biggest crew I've ever had, but for this show, I've got 10 folks that are working for me, which is like, it's humbling because I'm getting to put people back to work, bro.
This is why I'm talking. This is it. Damani? Okay.
Like, not just putting people back to work, but we're putting people back to work in an industry that has been decimated.
This is Byron Sanders, president and CEO of Big Thought.
And this is Damani Daniel, chief imaginator at The Event Nerd.
Welcome to Casually Creative, conversations about everyday creativity and nerdiness.
Welcome back to another amazing episode of Casually Creative. This is your co-host, Byron Sanders, and I am joined by this other
guy. J. Damani Daniel. Yo, yo, yo.
Did you say yo, yo, yo? Is that the only part that echoes?
Echoes. It's always the, yeah.
Just the yo, yo, yo.
Yeah. Have you never listened to an echo, bro?
No, I have. I have. I actually specialize in echoes. I'm really good at them.
What does that even mean?
Damn. You see what I do?
No, I don't.
You did.
Don't.
Jerk.
Don't.
So, welcome. Welcome back. We are really happy to come to you guys here today because we're going to do something special. Usually, what happened is we got two people. Your favorite co-host, Byron and Damani, Damani and Byron. And then we bring somebody on who's dope, who's got like a story to tell, who's got some creativity to just like slam down like Big Six, pow. But we ain't
was that a sports
that.
Reference? Was that a sports that reference?
Big Six?
Yeah.
Big Six, no. Wait, not... you said a horse?
Sports
reference. Okay, now I'm actually a little more angry. I'm a little more angry because if you miss a sports reference, I understand. But Big Six is obviously a domino reference. Uh-oh. You're of a certain hue, Damani. I don't know if people notice or not.
The name Damani didn't give that away.
Yeah, if Damani didn't give it away, you're black.
And well, here's the funny thing.
You didn't catch the Big Six reference?
Here's the thing. Like this is whatever.
Oh,
bro, I actually don't play any group games. Like, I don't like card games or any of that, dominoes, anything. Like, it's not my thing.
Hell, Damani.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Why? How do you go to any cookout?
I cook at the cookouts. That's what I bring to the table. I'm the dude that, I don't hide. I make dope food. What are you talking about?
You hiding, bro.
I'm making...
Nah.
I'm a dude on the grill making this shit delicious.
Exactly. And that's why we accept it. That's why we accept it. And that's why we allow you to continue to hide and duck this table. Here's the thing. What people don't understand is that learning dominoes and also learning how to play spades is a rite of passage in Black House.
Yeah. And I have not righted that passage.
But the thing is, you're clearly Black. Right. Like you,
that's true.
You're culturally Black as well. Right. Like you're both Black and Black. And the fact that you don't play these games means that there's some sort of asterisk in your get together family reunion experience. Right. So what you're telling me is you were always the dude on the grill. They're like, oh, Damani's holding it down. Yeah. Damani's holding it down out there on the grill.
Yeah.
Secret. But you had a secret.
Yeah.
You had a dirty little ugly ass secret.
That's true. I don't play none of them games.
You don't play none of them games.
Well, here's the you want to go a deeper level of irony?
Really, I'm really interested. Now,
you know who actually is good at dominoes and would be good at spades if any Black people would give her a chance?
Heather Daniel.
Yep. Heather Dawn. Heather Dawn Daniel.
The Dawn.
Yeah, she because her family growing up, all they did was play cards. And so she can play any card game.
She's a shark.
I mean, but people like, have you ever played spades? And she's like, is it like this? I don't know. And it is like whatever it is that she said it was.
Of course. Yeah.
And so like, she literally needs like 5 minutes to make sure she's got it. But you know, black people in spades,
they're the most intolerant. You know what? Black people love, we are the most forgiving people. We're the most accepting people in many instances. People bring you into the fold. But if you show up at one of our get togethers, one of our functions, if you will, and you can't play dominoes, it's actually like this, or spades, it's like this weird thing. Here's how it happens. Walk with me, Damani. We haven't rehearsed this. I'm going to tell y'all this, but you're going to see this is how it works. All right. There's a game going on.
Water? Like, drink some more wine or something. I don't know.
All right. So there's a game going on the table, right?
Mm-hmm, I see it.
You know, game just ended. There's two seats that open up. Mm-hmm. All right. And then Damani's walking by the table and somebody's like, Damani, you going to get on this game? And then Damani would say,
nah, I'm good. But you know who can?
Who?
My wife. That's what I would say.
That's actually, yeah. Okay. That's not how this exercise was.
Well, this is not scripted. If you want me to do what you said, you got to give me a script.
That's literally what you would say. I'm going to go with the typical way that this interaction would go. But here's what would happen. Okay. So somebody walking up, you're like, hey, or let's say you're interested in learning how to play. Okay.
Sure.
All right. So table's open. Hey, who's up next? Damani, you're the person who doesn't know how to play, but is interested in knowing how to play. Go ahead.
I mean, I want to play. I mean, I don't know how, but...
Whoa, you don't know how to play?
What's
wrong with you, fam? You don't know how to play? Hey, D, he don't know how to play. Oh, bro, you don't know how to play? It's ridiculous.
But how am I supposed to learn?
Yeah, man, nah. I can't play with it. I can't play if you don't know how to play.
But I want to learn.
So this is the conundrum. Mm. Nobody wants to be on your team when you don't know how to play because it's serious every time. Also, how you going to learn how to play?
I mean, you're not wrong.
You got to actually play.
It's true.
And so to this day, Damani, I actually don't remember how I actually learned. Because what happens is you're stuck in it.
Bible? It was in the Black Bible that they give you at birth.
Oh yeah, this is a Black Bible. It's like the little green one, the New Testament.
Black.
It's black. It's only about 12 pages.
Yeah.
You know, really small font. But what happens is Damani, this is the conundrum. It's such a weird what is it? What's the best way? I would say it's a phenomenon because one day you're born.
Yeah.
And then
some years later,
you knew how to play dominoes and spades.
And I never had that. That's
bless you, man.
But I'm telling y'all, my wife, my white wife, if people would let, like literally give her one round to watch it, she would school these fools. And she's gotten so much better at trash talking in the past 8 years.
Wow. It is a learning skill.
Yeah. But here we are.
Remember when we said we were going to be tight today?
Yeah, I do. Let's go.
But you know what, Heather? Slice and dice, fam. On the cutting floor. Chop it up. We love you.
We do. It's true.
All right. So here's the thing. What we're doing today is we're going to make sure that we have a conversation that's going to get into the origin story of the origin story. We're big about superheroes on this here podcast, and we want to get the origin story. Where did all the goodness start? Where did the greatness come from? We want to know where the greatness of the greatness came from. Damani Daniel is actually the one responsible for the birth of Casually Creative. Damani, am I wrong?
You're not. That is an accurate statement, actually. That is a very accurate statement.
So with that being an accurate statement, I think it's so important that we dive into the brain, into the prefrontal cortex, into the amygdala.
Hippocampus.
You know what I almost said? The hippochondriac.
That's hypochondriac. So,
but I mix the terms.
Yeah, but that's not a thing.
Terms, two words. We're gonna dive into the brain, the cerebellum, both lobes.
You're just showing off that you know brain names.
Encased in a sack of amniotic fluid.
This is just weird. Just move on.
Call the meninges.
What? What? Stop. Let's just go. Just brain sac. I mean, I understand.
Sac of your brain.
Okay, I get it. It's also weird that you keep saying sac.
Go into his brain, and we're gonna figure out from whence did this idea come, and we're gonna learn more about his story. So, Damani, let's go, man. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Like, where did, first of all, where are you from, bro?
I was born by the river.
That's a lie.
It's true. I was born in Queens, New York. There, I mean, New York has a river.
So what's up, man?
No, born and raised in, born in Queens, but raised in Brooklyn, New York. Lived there for 17 years of my life. Before I moved, you know, as one does when you leave New York, you move to kind of a hotbed of cultural activity, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Such a hotbed. Sizzling.
So I moved from Brooklyn to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I was actually in Tulsa for 9 years.
Which is still a surprise every time you say it.
I know. Yeah, I was in Tulsa for 9 years. And from Tulsa, this is jumping around.
What age were you, sir? How old were you?
I went to Tulsa at 17 to go to college. So I went to college. I went to Tulsa at 17 and I left at 26. And I moved to, because again, I'm following this path of cultural progression.
Yeah.
So I went from New York to Tulsa, and then from Tulsa to East Texas.
East Texas.
Yeah, to a town.
This is cultural progression, okay? Yes. It's a different kind of cultural experience.
And then I lived there for only 6 months, but I lived in a town of 322 people with an African-American population of one. Is this guy right here?
Would this be considered a sundown town, Damani?
I don't know if it's a sunset town, but probably, because it's Texas. Is it Texas? And there was one black person and it was me. So at some point, I do believe that it was a sunset town, but I can't actually guarantee that. Yeah, so I have to do some research.
Well, good. I wouldn't want you to go and do any additional research, sir.
That's fair.
I mean, do an empirical study would not yield.
No, that's true. So went from East Texas, and then I actually lost my job in East Texas and was presented with the opportunity to either move back to Tulsa, where I had a really great network of folks that I like, who loved me and I loved, and I genuinely did love my time in Tulsa.
T-Town, so did I.
Yeah, right? I know. Like, you were at UT. I know. People think I'm joking. I'm like, Tulsa was great, especially because the time that we both were there was a time when Tulsa was kind of doing its whole cocooning into butterfly status. Like, it went from being, what the fuck are you doing here? To, oh, okay.
It's metamorphosis.
That's not a word.
Metamorphosis.
That's the word. And so I went from there to East Texas. And then I had the chance to either move back to Tulsa, where I had a good network, or move to Dallas, where I knew no one. Except for I had heard tale told of these four cousins that I had.
Okay.
That I had met once. But I had family, right? And so.
Yeah, that's fam right there. There you go.
So I, as all wise people do, so I moved to Dallas and then just kind of found my way here. Was a DJ for a little bit. Thought that was a thing that I wanted to do. I was on the ones and the twos. I was a server for a little bit. And then I found myself thrust into the events industry and realized quickly that it was what I loved. I had kind of been tangentially connected to the events industry prior to that, but really diving into it during my time when I moved here really made me realize just how fantastic this industry, this experience industry, they didn't call it that back then, but this experience industry was and is. And so kind of put all the eggs in that basket, and it's evolved over the years to look like a bunch of different things, but it's always centered around the opportunity to bring people together around a centralized theme or goal or idea to give people an opportunity to connect, to give people an opportunity to connect with each other and to connect past each other with the thing, whatever that thing is.
So how did you get Pelvic Thrust into the experience industry? You see what I did?
It was weird.
Experience industry?
That was weird.
Which part, the Pelvic Thrust or the experience?
All of it. Industry? I mean, okay. I mean, honestly, all of it.
Yeah. You were thrust. You said thrust.
I didn't say it was a pelvic thrust, but you know. Yeah, that's fair. So in high school, I was always the kid that would, even before high school, I was always the kid who was taking stuff apart, right? I was always, taking apart radio,
robbing people.
No, I was taking stuff apart, like in my house, electronics. So I was always taking stuff apart, like radios, microphones, and putting them back together ish. Yeah. Also tires and cars. Yes. No, if it was electronic, there's a likelihood that I was going to take it apart and try to figure out how it worked.
Okay.
And much to the chagrin of my mom, but to the celebration of my dad, because he was like, yeah sure. And so I was always the audio guy, right? I taught myself audio, was working at the church.
I was just about to say that. I was like, did it start at the church?
It did. Of course. It did. And we didn't know what we were doing.
You never do, because listen, nobody knows if you did it right or not.
No, they don't. They don't.
They just needed somebody who.
If there was feedback, we would pray because it was the devil.
Yeah.
not the fact that you were holding the microphone in front of the speaker. It was the devil.
So true. The devil trying to take my time, y'all. It's like,
no, you walk in front of a microphone. It's physics. And so I did that. And then honestly, the transition point for me, realizing that I really wanted to be a part of like the production industry, because that's what it started as. I started out thinking that I wanted to be an audio engineer. I was on campus one day, and there was I went to a Christian university. And so they had these like music missions teams that went out every year. And there was one of these music missions teams that was doing a performance on the lawn. And I remember walking up being like, hey, I don't know any, I mean, I'm an audio guy at my church. Again, not on the same level.
But Damani, if I could be honest though,
yeah.
You went to a Christian, many people, if you have not been to a Christian college or, you know, higher ed institution, tell the truth, shame the devil, some of the dopest ass audio engineering experiences come from, for some reason, it's like this niche space.
Yeah.
Where they get some phenomenal AV experience, bro.
Yeah. I started volunteering my time with that group. And then eventually over the years of college became the head production dude for one of the head production dudes for the university. So much so that after I graduated from college, the university made a position for me and split it across two departments so that they could hire me to work for the university doing production work. And I really thought that that's what I was going to do. I was going to do audio engineering and just be that dude. And then I did audio engineering and I realized that I freaking hated it. But I loved what it contributed to. I didn't want to be the guy pushing the buttons and pushing the faders, but I wanted to be the one helping those button pushers and those faders, those fader riders contribute to the development of an overall vision and overall goal. And so,
with the hat, I kind of got set. You wanted to be a guy with a half headset and the mic that came in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. I was wearing one earlier today, as a matter of fact. And so, you know, did that. And that honestly was my first kind of foray into the events industry for real. And realizing that this was a really dope environment where I got to be a part of something that really was bigger than myself. Because you look at your average event, your average production, and you go and you see and you experience it. But you don't realize the fact that there were 30, 40, 50, 100 people who were required to make that thing come to life. Yeah. And so that's kind of how I started in the events industry, was just pushing buttons and riding faders. And then that evolved into designing stuff and designing stages and creating experiences. And then I haven't looked back since.
Did you ever go and read a manual on how to become an events industry entrepreneur?
I read a manual on how to become an audio engineer. I still have that book, actually. I still have that book.
So you're going through this experience. You organically, I mean, really, truly, like, tripped into this stuff, and you just loved it, and you figured out what you wanted to do. So fast forward, you're in the industry, you're doing it big, you went to college and got early experiences, and now you're doing this thing out in the world. How in tarnations did you get to be J. Damani Daniel, the chief imaginator of the Event Nerd?
Bum, bum, bum. It's funny, like, I've realized there was someone that asked me probably about 2 years ago to, she was doing a paper for her dissertation, and she wanted to interview people of color in the entertainment and events industry and just kind of know their story, because there aren't a lot of us, to be quite honest. And she asked me similarly, you know, how did I get here? And one of the things that I always say is every job, literally every job that I have had has been additive.
Mm.
If I look back now at what I'm doing, I was thinking about this two nights ago, actually. I was looking back, if I look back now, this is the sum total of all the jobs that I've had before, from my job as the stage manager for a 10,000 seat arena on my campus, to my job as the intern for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, or excuse me, the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, to my time working for Tudor Investment Corporation, which I've talked about in a previous podcast. Paul Tudor Jones was someone that I literally grew up around, one of the richest men in the world.
And
learning all these skills and these things that weren't always directly aligned with production, but were tied, I realize now, to what it is that I'm doing. And so it's been all these additive moments that have kind of conspired, if you will. I had a mom who, I was talking to her the other day, I had a mom who just found dope shit for us to do. And she found it during a time, there was no internet, right? There was no Google. But I, growing up, was in, like, here are the programs that I was involved in. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead, run through the list.
I was involved in the Science Skills Center.
Wow.
Where I went every day, Monday through Thursday, from the time I got out of school until the time they dropped me off.
Okay.
Science Skills Center.
What?
I was involved in the World Institute of Science and Technology.
Bam.
I was in the chancellor of the school district, like in Dallas, excuse me, in New York, they call it the chancellor.
The
school district. He had a committee of students that he asked opinions of. I was in that.
It's like the youth council or the youth trustees.
Yes. I was in the I Have a Dream program, which was how I knew and met Paul Tudor Jones, student government. Man. So my mom was like, no, we're going to find you stuff to do. And it never felt weird. Like, I was always in something, and it never felt like, oh, I'm doing so much. It was just, this is what you did.
It almost seems like that's the mirror image of your life today. Which is very clearly, you know, when that first got started. And it all started because your mama got tired of your mouth in the house.
She's like, that's fair. Know. That's fair. She's like, you need to be out the house till 7 o'clock every night. So
every night.
I'd leave at like 7:30 in the morning, go to school. After school, I get picked up by a school bus, taken to whatever the program was, and I'd be there until they dropped me off. And the I Have a Dream program, I didn't get dropped off some nights till like 8, 9.
Listen, your mom was like, either I can put you in drugs or I could put you in the I Have a Dream program. Put you in drugs. Like, there's like a vat of drugs, and then you put the child in it.
My mother's going to smack you the next time she sees you, because she loves this podcast.
Yeah, I love your mom because she's amazing. That's true. And this is not Byron just making stuff up. Like, we met at a art gallery. And it was instant. It was strong affection at first sight.
Yeah, she's pretty dope. And then my dad was a public speaker, community organizer, advocate for giving people of color the opportunity to understand and own their own wealth and create their own wealth. And so just being around those folks, it wasn't always. And my father was a little bit of a nerd too, right? He liked gear. He liked to buy. He was always buying new stuff.
Gear was a lot bigger back then.
It's true. It's true.
So much bigger. Man, you remember the first camcorders? First of all, we called them camcorders.
We did call them camcorders. Now we call them phones.
They were, exactly. We call them phones. We call them Angry Birds players. You know, it's, but it was, it's the shoulder mounted joint, right? Yep. Like, you know, kind of like we used to do boom boxes. I even had a shoulder pad, if you will.
It's true. Cause it was heavy. That's why.
That's right. You had to put a big old VHS joint in there if you're going to record something. Yeah. Sound was terrible.
It was terrible. Cause I had that little shotgun mic on the front. Yep. All right. No, but like genuinely, it was because they put me in stuff. They, you know, we've had some folks on the podcast who've talked about the fact that they were put in a corner with 2x4s and some nails and a hammer. I mean, that was my version of a 2x4 with a nail and a hammer. I was sent, go figure out sciencey things and come back and tell me about it later. And so I got there because, yep.
I was just going to say, how'd that square up with you being black?
I grew up in a blackity black neighborhood.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I did. I was always, and I will say this, I was always the quote, and I'm putting this in hard.
Go ahead.
I was always the whitest black kid.
Yeah.
That anyone knew, whatever that means.
No, man, let's go into it. What does that mean? What's up?
Typically what it has historically meant is that you speak a certain way, and by a certain way, it's in polysyllabic syllables. And so you speak in polysyllabic words, rather, that...
I'll say, if you got polysyllabic syllables, that's like a fraction of a fraction. That's amazing. Wow. How do you even do that?
I hate you so much.
How do you even do that?
I hate you so much. But I spoke a certain way, and it was because my mother was a teacher and my father was a, like I said, a public speaker, an orator, a pastor. And I went to, I also forgot about, I was in Toastmasters as a kid, because that's a thing that you do as a 12-year-old.
you the lone kid, the boy genius in there with grown people trying to actually get their talk on?
A little bit. Yeah. 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 But you know, it was weird, right? Being a white, quote, white black kid just literally meant that I didn't do the things that the other black kids did. That I didn't do the things that were approved, whatever that meant, for black
approved.
Men. Yeah, I didn't do black approved things. Like I don't know how to play spades still to this day.
Yeah, you tend to buck the conventional. You don't play basketball.
I don't watch basketball or any sport.
You're from Brooklyn and you don't play or watch basketball.
I don't. All of my family does.
Of course I do.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just always found myself gravitating towards things that weren't common for whatever that means, common for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to do the things that were just of interest. And I never wanted to do one thing. Like it was never just, I'm going to do this. It was always, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. So Sam and Jeremy's episode really spoke to me because it was like, I don't just want to do one thing. Yeah. I want to do that and that and that. And somehow make them all tie together.
But Donnie, realized, how did you, why'd you feel comfortable in your own skin? Weirdo.
I didn't. True story. I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin until about, I didn't start. Let me even say that. I didn't start feeling comfortable until probably 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're an old ass MF-er.
I just turned 39. And I'll say
comfortable. I said about 36. I did math.
That's good math. That's a good job. Yeah. And maybe it's a little bit of an exaggeration to say 3 years ago. I mean, there's a progression, right? You don't wake up one day at 36 and go, I feel comfortable in my skin. So there was a gradual progression. But I think because for so long in my young life, I was not seen as insert adjective enough, black enough, athletic enough, whatever it is, enough, that I found it hard to really lean into the things that I was. I was so focused on the things that people said that I wasn't, or that I wasn't enough of. And this wasn't coming from my family necessarily. I had great family, great friends, like just a great upbringing, but very supportive. But I just didn't feel blank enough. And that always struck me as an issue. And it was part of why I never fully leaned into the fact that, you know what? I like to get, I like hip hop and I also like country music. Mm. I like jazz and classical. I like classical and EDM. Yeah. And I will regularly put on each of those styles of music, just as an example, depending on the mood and the vibe. I love that my wife is from a small town in West Texas and that we can go out and learn the cows and I can sit out on the gator and
eat, shoot.
I mean, I've never, I suck at shooting as well.
Okay. No, that's fair. But,
yeah, that's fair. But like, I love it, but I also absolutely love fancy dinners. So I didn't feel comfortable until probably like three. I didn't feel where I was like, oh, okay.
So like, can I give you my, 4 years ago, my first impressions of you when we first met?
Oh, like, this is, I mean, I'm, yes.
It's going to be good. Question mark? Right, so, you know, you're walking in. Y'all, we, for those of you who don't know, Damani and I first met through forced friendship in a leadership program called Mayor Star Council. I actually serve as chair of the board of this organization today. We're alums of the first class.
What best class. Nine years in?
First class, best class. This is class nine. So we're almost at a decade, homie.
Jeez, bro.
I know. Anyway. Dallas Mayor Star Council is one of the best leadership organizations alive. It's an actual alive leadership organization.
It's true.
We met each other and we're all coming together and Damani's there. And I was like, oh, look, it's another black guy. That's cool. I mean, there were like a couple of us. But I was like, it's true. Good to see another one in the room. So, yo, what's up? What's up? And so, first of all, his name stood out. His name was Damani. I was like, that's actually kind of a dope name. Let me go meet this guy. And then we go over there. I go over there. I start talking to him. And he sounds like how he sounds. And I was like,
what does that mean?
Everybody knows what it means because they're listening to a podcast. So I don't even need to explain it. So he sounds like the guy on this podcast. And I'm like, huh, that's cool. I wonder what his story is. And y'all know what? I made up a story in my head. And then I was going to see if it was actually true. The story that I made up was, you ready?
Oh, God.
Probably is dating and or married to a white person. That's the first thing.
Okay.
Two. Probably went to private school. I was off.
I was public school all through college.
Yeah.
Until college.
Grew up in a suburb in the Midwest.
Oh. You're so off.
I was off. And is probably a really nice guy who likes both black things, air quotes, hard air quotes, and white things.
That's accurate.
That's accurate, right?
That's accurate. Yeah, so, you got like 2 out of 6, but you know, whatever.
I got 2 out of 12. 2 out of 12. But that first one I nailed. I crushed it.
That's fair.
That out the park. But it was because, I mean, you gave off those vibes, man, of being a kind of guy who doesn't necessarily fit in a particular box. And as you could tell, you know, we got to be really, really good friends, deep friends.
Yeah.
So it's not like I was putting a actual judgment on any of that stuff. I just made up a story, you know, of the profile. Yeah. But to your point, man, like when you really think about all of that stuff and you think about how, you know, you just decided, cause I know other members of your family too, right? Like y'all black, we are a black family.
Y'all are a black family.
Yes, exactly. And so for you to have picked up what you, there's something embedded in you that made you okay with being different mm-hmm. in the first place. And I know you didn't necessarily get fully comfortable with it, but you were not uncomfortable to the point of not being and trying and doing the things that you wanted to do and be in. What is that? What's all that?
I honestly don't know because I didn't come from a family. Like, my family's extremely supportive. Like, they have never not supported me. but I didn't come from a family that necessarily understood the things that I was in, right? I talk about the fact that I've got one sister who was a college athlete. She was a D1 athlete.
Sure is.
And loved basketball and you know, she just, that's what she did. She ran track for a while and she was good at it. And then she swam for a while and she was good at it. And then she played ball for a while and she was really good at it. So I had that as one sister. My other sister was a dancer. And I always kind of jokingly said that I didn't do anything that put me on a stage for people to ever recognize. So that was always a really difficult thing for me. Both my sisters did public facing things that were recognized, and I did like student government and debate and shit like that.
Every time, but both of those are explicitly on stages. What are you talking about?
But it just felt, it felt weird because they're on a much smaller stage than playing basketball or dancing for a bunch of folks.
All right.
So I never felt comfortable, even though I love the things that I was doing, I never felt comfortable doing the things that I was doing because I felt like I should be, by virtue of being black and from Brooklyn, be doing other things.
So how does that show up when you meet? I know I'm jumping, but this is how our conversation is like. You guys are getting a picture into it.
True.
So how do you then square that up with you meet Heather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's meeting Heather with no hyperbole has been one of the most unexpected transitional moments of my life. Because I, growing up, because I was never black enough, for being honest, like because I was never, quote, black enough, it was difficult for me to be accepted by many black women that I was growing up around. Just because I didn't fit the archetype of what it meant in Brooklyn to be a black boy in Brooklyn. I go to college. And I was not black enough to be the black folks in the school. Granted, I went to Tulsa, the Christian college in Tulsa. Right. There weren't a lot of black folks. But I was black enough to be the black friend that a lot of people had. And going through life and just out of college and just when I met Heather, I had actually when I met Heather, I was still in another relationship. Heather and I didn't date. When I was in a relationship, nothing untoward happened. But I met her then. And I didn't know anything about her to the level that I do now, obviously, right? I didn't know that she was from this small town in West Texas. I didn't know that her that she had grown up raising pigs and sheep. I didn't know that her parents owned a floral shop and that her dad used to be a landman. He used to work on the oil fields. I didn't know any of this. But I have realized how transformational all of those things have been.
How so? Me.
You know, my in-laws live 6.5 hours away in the panhandle of West Texas. Whenever I roll into town, I am the black guy. I think there are four people now, but when I first started rolling into town, I was the black guy that came into town.
Quadruple.
I was the black guy married to Heather. I mean, that's a 400% return. Was exposed to a side of life that I didn't know about. Right. Heather revealed to me this country life. I'll never forget one time we were at Heather's house, her family's old house. And when we were dating and I got out the car, black boy from Brooklyn. And I was like, oh, my God, what's that smell? Her dad said, money. Because it was the smell of cow and pig shit. Which, if you got cow and pig shit, it means
listen,
you got cows and pigs.
Words, which means truer words, man. Yeah. That's the that's. I mean, he ain't lying.
Money.
He ain't lying.
He's not.
Yo,
he's not. And so, you know, meeting Heather was interesting, just because I had dated white girls for since college. Like, I dated a few white girls since college, but I'd never dated this country of a white girl. But she was a country white girl who had city. Isms. Like she was living in Dallas, but from a very small town. And there was this interesting balance that I've discovered over the course of the past what are we talking about? 8 years? It'll be actually, so by the time this episode drops, so this episode, we celebrated, so when this episode drops, we will have celebrated our 8th anniversary. Whoa. 2 days ago. So at the time that we're recording this episode, our anniversary is tomorrow, but when it drops, it'll be 2 days ago.
There you go. Wow. So
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about y'all. I think about y'all's relationship today, right? So natural, so smooth. Just, I mean, like, it's just, of course, it's one of those things. And y'all have these two amazing boys who are hilarious. Also, one of them, the intro music y'all heard earlier today, we just, you know, and the outro music as well. We say that, you know, that's a little kid. There's the last name is Daniel. That's Jay DeMoney.
That's me. Yeah. Ezekiel Daniel. So Ezekiel actually composed that music. So what, he's 7 now? So he was 5? 4 and a half. And he was just playing around with the map on his iPad. And he made that. Like he did that. And he gave it to me. And I was like, yo, son, this is fire. I'm sending this to a producer to do something with. And that was before I even had the podcast. I was just like.
When I was talking about the music that we were going to be using, Demi's like, nah, we got the music, fam. Don't worry about that. Let's move on to this, something else. I was like, okay, this must be fire.
It's true.
And then he showed it to me. I was like, okay, this little jazzy. Who did that? It's like, my toddler. I was like, what? What? That's cool. That's cool. And then Dean did the cut.
Yep, Dean, my cousin, and Dean, I lived downstairs from him most of my young life, and Dean produced it along with another name by the name a guy by the name of Marcus Reddick at a Queens, but yeah, we took Ezekiel's sample, sent it over to Dean and Marcus, and they put some fire to it.
These are East Side rappers over here, all of them East Side rappers. Dean's huge, by the way. I don't know if y'all have listened. He's one of our earlier podcasts. He's a large person, also hilarious, smart, brilliant, and a weirdo himself. So I'm
trying to get him to move to Dallas. That's my goal.
So, you know, I'm still leaning in. You know, again, your black kid who grows up blackety black in the middle of New York, and instead of hooping, and wearing Tim's.
Nope. I've never owned a pair. Well, that's the only Tim's I've ever owned.
This is what I'm talking about.
Because a black man
who grew up in Brooklyn and has never worn Tim's for fun, except to actually work and or hike. So, we're talking to an alien right here, right?
You know what else I've never owned? Never owned not one time? A pair of J's.
That's right. We talked about that. This guy is so weird. He's like, Brooklyn, sit down.
He's so stupid. You're so stupid. I hate
Brooklyn,
you.
Sit down. You defy every convention of a black. Yeah,
Brooklynism.
You defy every Brooklynism, every black Brooklynism. And so when we think about how that shows up and reflects in the world and the life that you've lived thus far, it actually makes a lot of sense. You're so consistent with being so inconsistent with every trope.
It's fair.
So tell me, man, like event nerd, you know, you were doing all of this stuff. Being a weirdo most of your life, you got into the production spaces, AV, and then eventually audio, and then production, and the whole thing, and the whole shebang. Now there's lights, camera, and action. So, how did the entity and the entrepreneurial venture Event Nerd come to pass?
So I get bored easily. I'm sorry. And I like to constantly be kind of, I know you're very surprised. I like to constantly be thinking of like new things. I'll never forget the moment. I was sitting in Dallas, Texas, in a coffee shop by the name of Crooked Tree Coffee Shop.
Crooked Tree.
Oh, Crooked Tree. And I was sitting there in their front room. It was an old house that they had converted into a coffee shop. So I was sitting in what would have been, I'm assuming, the parlor, the living room, whatever. And I was sitting there talking to, I was working for a company by the name of Eventbrite. You guys have heard of Eventbrite. At the time, no one had heard of Eventbrite.
I used it once or thrice.
That's fine. At the time, I was employee like 50 or something like that. It was in the early days. And I was sitting there talking to a buddy of mine, Ryan Bertolino, who was an event producer. And he was, I don't remember exactly what the topic of conversation was, but I do remember that he was looking for someone to basically be the conduit between the idea that he had and some as yet undetermined technological solution. And I spend my life, I love nerdy shit, technology stuff. And so I was like, oh yeah, we can do that. And I started telling him how he could get from where he was to where he needed to be with technological solutions. And somehow out of that, I was like, huh. He was like, do you do that? I was like,
As a matter of fact, I can provide
those services. And so I just thought it from there. That's how the idea for the Event Nerd was born. But the idea for the Event Nerd has evolved so many times since then that it really was out of, I was bored. There were people looking for a solution. I knew better than them what they needed. And so I started making recommendations. And then that just became a business, sort of. But it's not like I set out. I've never written a business plan. Never, not once. No back of the napkin business plan, nothing.
So when you say you haven't written a business plan, what, nothing? Outlines?
No, not.
Wow.
I have had ideas of what I thought this thing was going to look like, but the thing that I thought that it was going to look like is nothing like what it looks like now. The story I like to tell, my first event as the Event Nerd was with Dallas Social Venture Partners. Tony Flayo and I talk about this all the time. Well, not all the time. I've mentioned it to Tony. It's back under their former CEO.
Frank?
Frank. Yeah. Yep. Frank Santoni.
Really? When did you start Event Nerd again?
Depends on when are we talking about when I started saying that I was the Event Nerd or when I actually had a government entity? Because those are two different dates. Both of them. So here's the way it went down. I don't know the exact date for either, but I can say this. I had come up with the name for the Event Nerd because I actually didn't come up with it. There was an article written about me as the 40 under 40 to watch.
30 under 40.
Or 30. 30 under 30 at the time, I think.
I knew.
It was 30 under 30. Right? Yeah, I was under 30. Back in 20 something. And in it, they called me the Event Nerd because of my love of technology and the events industry. And I was like, ooh, that's good. I'm going to name my company that. And I did what you do. I bought the domain and had a logo created and business cards and an email address. And that was what I had. And I was going out there and I was meeting people.
That was actually the year before Mayor Star Council, believe it.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And so I was handing out business cards and doing the thing. And then DSVP, Dallas Social Venture Partners, which is a fantastic organization here in Dallas, hired me to produce their annual conference.
Big Bang.
Big Bang. Had I ever produced a conference before?
What?
I had never produced a conference before.
Y'all, let me give a little bit of context. So Big Bang is actually kind of a big deal here in Dallas. I actually regionally. Some of the people who have been on this podcast who are, you know, kind of a big deal globally have been on main stage at Big Bang. Michael Sorrell has been there. Mm-hmm. Brittany K. Barnett, who just dropped some straight hot fire Amazon bestseller.
Oh, so hot.
Go out and pick up her book, A Knock at Midnight. It's phenomenal. She is a recent speaker for a social venture partner. I was a partner for a long time, actually, and was on the board, all that jazz. We did a lot of good stuff. Big Bang is the preeminent thing that they do. And you produced it?
Yeah, I did. Are you serious? The first major thing that I had done on my own as the Event Nerd. Yes. Here's how much it was the first thing. So I had business cards and a website, and a website. And my website, I mean,
right, of course, like the night before.
No, I had a website for like, you know, a week.
I was like, come on, let's not trip. Like, it was brand new. It's pretty new.
Yeah, it was brand new. And so Frank hires me. When Frank hired me, he said, do I make the check out to the Event Nerd? I said, absolutely, yeah, Event Nerd. The problem is that I didn't have a bank account. And the reason I didn't have a bank account is because in order to have a bank account, a business bank account, you have to be either incorporated or at the very least have a DBA. And to do so cost $300. And Heather and I did not have $300. And so I had just been the Event Nerd because I had the domain name. And so they DSPP hands me the check. And the check was, I think, for like, and like it wasn't for a lot of money. He hands me the check and I go to Heather and I'm like, babe, so here's the deal. I have this, I'm producing this event. We got our first, I got his first piece of business. She's like, that's so great, babe. That's so awesome. And I said, but I can't deposit the check because I don't have a bank account. She's like, so you got a bank account? I was like, well, I can't because I have to incorporate the company to be able to give them my EIN. And so I said, so here's what I'd like to do.
You're working extremely backwards at this point. Like you're
very, 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 very much so. Well, we just didn't have the money. We didn't have an extra $300.
Look, bro, like I get it. When you start and you work it, you fake it until you make it. It's like, bro, can you do this big project? Absolutely. What's your business? Let me go start it.
Yeah, that's basically what happened. And so I got Heather to approve. Heather is way more left brain than I am. She's very right brain, but she also has, well, I don't really have much of a left brain. But she said, I said, babe, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to borrow $400 or $500 from our like monthly bills, which that was a significant sum of money at the time for us, so that I can register my company, so I can incorporate my company, so that I can open up a bank account, so that I can deposit the check, so that we can pay our mortgage because I'll pay us back.
Yo, that if that's not the quintessential entrepreneur story, man, you did it wrong. You should just got a small loan for $1 million from your daddy.
Is that how it works, man? I got it. Well, I never forget. Heather was like, so you have the money? I said, yes. She said, you have the check. I said, babe, the check is right here for whatever the amount was. I don't remember what it was. The check is right here. And I was like, literally, I just need to float this for like 3-4 days. She was like, okay, well, our mortgage is due in like 5-6 days. So this money needs to be back in our account in 5 days.
I was like,
I got you, babe. So yeah, no business plan ever. That was how the business got started.
So that, like I said, the quintessential, like of course, Damani entrepreneur story. But you know, fast forward, Event Nerd, y'all kind of a thing. Talk a little bit about some stuff you've done, bro. Like, what's up? What you got? What you got? What are the notches on your belt?
We've had some pretty dope clients. Rolling Stone, Capital One Bank.
I heard it.
You've heard of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you familiar with them? Of course, I'm like blanking now and forgetting other ones. But those are two of the big ones that people are definitely going to recognize. HBO was a client. It's a true story. Not to mention, we've done a number of really dope local events and local experiences. We've had some international brands, you know, we've worked all across the world, all around the country, just really, really creating dope shit. And what we realized, what we've landed on now is that we're not one thing. We are people who understand technology and figure out ways to deliver solutions to people that sometimes involve technology, but always will be dope.
So let's talk about that. You literally, I've actually seen this in action, that you are not just one thing. You're multiple things. You're a lot of stuff. You are ever changing. You are. Ever
again, I get bored easily. So it's like, today we're going to design a stage for this conference. Excuse me. We're going to design a stage today for this concert featuring Nas and Jacob Banks. And tomorrow, we're going to do a conference for a technology company. Why? Because otherwise I'd be bored.
So how Damani, how in tarnation do you convince somebody who's like, I got a lot of money and I don't know what to do? You, sir, you with the snapback. I'm going to give you this money because I trust you. How do you instill confidence in these clients? And you're creating, like you're living on the frontiers of possibility. And some of this stuff you ain't even done before. Like, for real.
No, yeah. There's a lot of stuff we haven't done. So, okay. So the model that we've kind of landed on as a company is, we've got a bunch of really dope people who do dope shit by themselves.
Okay.
So like, there are all these people who do dope shit. There are designers and video engineers and audio engineers and like artists and accountants. And there are all these people that really do dope shit and are very good at what they do. Yeah. And the ones that we work with have gotten good at what they do by virtue of doing the thing that they do.
Okay.
Like, and they've had to figure out ways to do it for little to no money. Yeah. I always say that the team that I've worked with have all historically created really dope events for $10,000.
All right.
You turn around and give us 100 or 200 or 300. It's like, oh, we about to do the damn thing.
It's getting done.
It's getting done. So how do I get them to trust me? I'm just me, right? I'm just like, here's what we can do. Here's the vision that I have for the thing that you want to do. And I genuinely love this industry. I love creating. I love fostering and developing new ideas and pulling in different idea sources to like aggregate them into a new thing.
But you don't know what the hell you're doing. You don't know. You haven't done it before. How do you sit in front of a person with lots of money and say, I have lots of money. I'm going to do this thing. It's not just the money. I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to invite people to it. I want them to spend their money to come for an experience. And they, if they don't have a good experience, they're going to blast me. They're going to put me on the internet. They're going to give me bad stars, all of this stuff. And I am entrusting you.
Yeah.
You to make me look good. And your black ass is going to sit there and be like, I have an idea and I haven't done it before.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm going to get you to pay me a lot of money and I'm going to do it. And not only is that going to happen, but it's going to be amazing. How in the world do you do that?
Because as cliche as it sounds, it's because I have the absolute best people around me, right? The people that are on my most immediate team and the folks that are like one step removed and one step removed are really, really good. And so I get to come up with crazy shit because I know it can be created. So I know, because I've been a student of so many things: art, history, culture, technology, computer science, like all these things. I've studied all these things. I take all this information and then I assimilate that information like the Borg, because I'm a Star Trek fan.
Right.
I assimilate the information and then I deliver a new idea. But the way that I'm able to do it is because when I sell you an idea, I know the people on my team who can deliver that part of the idea that I came up with. There have been times where I have been sitting in a meeting with some of my team members. We've just been like shooting this. I wouldn't even call it a meeting. We're having some drinks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, I have a great idea. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, blah, 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 tell them something.
Yeah.
And then my guys and my ladies and my friends and my folks that I work with on a regular basis are like, okay, all right. So to do that, what we can do is we can do this and we can do this and then we can connect that to this. And then at some point I'm like, and I'm out. Y'all go ahead and figure out how to do the thing. So the reason that I'm able to sell the ideas to the people that I'm able to sell the ideas to is because there's this team of folks. Yeah. I call it Voltroning that shit.
Yeah.
Each member of Voltron is a dope cat by themselves.
That's right. Absolutely. That's
both a metaphorical thing and a literal thing.
Completely.
Each one of them is a dope cat by themselves.
Yeah.
But when there is a task that is too big for any one cat to deal with on their own.
Yeah. Which is inevitably, it was inevitable every episode.
Yep. every episode, the cats are going to come together to create a super dope cat. I have a bunch of really dope cats who produce epic shit on their own anyway. I just get to put them in a room sometimes and watch insanity emerge. Like, I had a guy who told me that works with me, because all my guys are contractors. A guy that works with me said, he was encouraging another person to come work with us. And he said, I've never had a bad day with Damani. He's like, I've had days where I was like, I don't know how we're going to do this. Damani will absolutely ask you to do something that is impossible.
Yeah.
Because he sees that it is
possible.
I don't know how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, based on what I understand about the things, yeah, we should be able to do this.
So you're a fraud. Here's what I mean. Yeah. you are a magical fraud, because you give the impression that, you know, when I'm sitting down with you and you talk about this idea and you tell me all this stuff that could happen and all that jazz, and I'm like, wow, this guy really knows what he's doing. This guy, the one who's talking right here, really knows individually what he's doing. When in fact, all you are,
I'm a front man.
You're a front man. Mm-hmm. You're the Power Ranger who's like, okay, guys, it's time for the Megazord. When in fact, everybody thought it came out the package like that. Mm-mm. You're like, no, actually, there's a pterodactyl and a T-Rex and a triceratops, saber-toothed cat, a mastodon. And I think that's,
you're doing the call outs in your head, aren't you?
I was a saber-toothed tiger. Listen, so you're a fraud. You're a fraud, but actually, you know, all the best leaders are, because it gives the impression that there's some, you know, special, singularly amazing person. Steve Jobs, right? Yeah. You know, there's a lot about Steve Jobs that I'm not a fan of, and how he treated his people and led, and he was a jerk in many instances. Also, he surrounded himself with brilliant people. Mm-hmm. And the creativity that came from all of it, that was because you let these people be great, which is what you do. And I've seen it. Your people love you. So Event Nerd is going. It's really taking off. It's doing its thing. You got all this stuff. You also had another gig.
I did.
Same time as well. Then COVID, mother effer. And by effer, it's mother fogger. Fog. Mm-hmm. Yeah. COVID.
Yeah.
Get this in your life. Oh, events? Having happy times?
Shut down.
Bringing people together in large groups to enjoy oneself?
Nope.
Shut all of that down.
Yeah.
Get that out of here. What's up with the industry right now, bro?
What happened? Industry's hurting. Yeah. The industry's hurting. But I'll, you know, get myself in trouble by saying the industry's hurting because the industry's being lazy right now.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm just going to do what I do.
That sounds some real pull yourself up by your bootstrap. I'm going to do work hard. Work hard. You can do anything.
That's not what it is. What I am going to say is we are facing an opportunity here. That sounds cliche, but it's true. Mm. Like, the events industry is an industry comprised entirely of folks who we want to bring people together. Lots of them, right?
Yeah.
Lots. And we can't right now.
Yeah.
There are.
You don't want to be a super spreader.
No. There are primarily two schools of thought. There are those that are just waiting for it, quote unquote, to return to quote unquote normal.
Mm.
And then there are those that realize that normal is a moving target, and that normal won't look the same for everyone. And that's okay.
That's an Einsteinian thing to say.
I mean, we can't expect that we're going to return back to thousands of people, or if we do, it won't be for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I realized, I lost my job. I was working at a venue as the creative director, and I lost my job in the midst of COVID
which, by the way, people don't know this. I'm giving a little bit of context. Damani was the job. Like the place, the venue was Damani. So like nobody knows who actually owned this place. Everybody knows Damani. And like, and we're not talking about like small
in certain circles.
Nah, fam. Any circle that actually matters that had real people in it. And so, you know, I saw one of my favorite concerts there. Common was there. These were like, you know, y'all brought some real acts. Y'all had the K-pop group. What's her name?
I don't know.
All I know is that they sell out everything. They sold out like. They sold out like
4,000 people.
They sold out Pakistan. Like everybody in Pakistan came to their show. But the bottom line is, Damani brought real acts to this place. Like it was a big venue. And then you lost your job.
I did lose my job. You know, I was over their events program. So I always jokingly said that we did all the shit that no one ever knew about because they were private events. You know, they were like your event with Todrick Hall. No one knew that Todrick Hall was there unless they were coming to the event.
Big thought. Big night, 30th anniversary. It was a fire party, bro. It was fun.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
But you know, I lost that job, and I at the time was the sole breadwinner in my family. Mm. And you know, what do you do with that, right? The event nerd and the venue were kind of going. You know, Bomb Factory were going at the same time. We were building rising, both things at the same sure. time, and then all of a sudden, one of those legs is gone, right? So I'm. Yeah. Hopping around like that woman from I'ma Get You Sucker. And And it was weird. And it was like, I was like, but I can't, like I had lots of tears. Mm. And I was like, but I can't believe that this is it.
Yeah.
Like there's gotta be something more. I have to still provide for my family. Mm. I have to still create, even though the way that I was creating is gone. And so I just was, COVID hit, Corona hit, I lost my job. Mm. The event nerd was still going. The event nerd was an events industry, in the events industry, and I wasn't putting people together. I wasn't able to do large scale concerts or conferences or corporate events or things like that. I wasn't able to do any of that.
Yeah.
But my team had spent years kind of studying how events go, and we had spent years really understanding how you can use technology to make more engaging events. But they were the engaging events that nobody wanted to talk about, because why talk about technology for events when you can just put people in a room and solve the problem? And now all of a sudden we're confronted with the reality that we can't put people together. So this is why I say the events industry is lazy. Mm. Because there are tools to create opportunities for engagement for folks that people in the events industry, by and large, are not using. They are just saying, we will be, it'll, when we all get back together in 2020, whatever, that's when we will come back. And I'm like, okay, that's great. My family still needs to eat. Mm-hmm. So I got to go figure out a way to use the skills that my team has to deliver experiences that the constituency that we serve, the clients that we serve still want.
So... So taking that philosophy, you're like, all right, let's go hunt, but not hunt with like the same old spear and flint, mm-hmm. you know, stick and flint blade that we used to call spears. You went out there and built like a complex, bow and arrow system,
guided by laser telemetry.
I'm about to say that has like heat seeking
arrows,
adamantium tipped arrows. It's like what? Like you went out there and you're doing some mesa. Talk a little bit about some of how you are doing your work that previously did rely on packing a bunch of warm body Homo sapiens into like you know a relatively large but still constrained box.
So we've always thought that technology can actually connect people. The technology doesn't have to just be the thing that you do because you have to do it. The technology can legitimately be a thing that connects people. Okay. You have to use it properly. You have to use it properly, and you have to understand how it works. And so we were already starting to do some research on technological solutions that connect people with each other. That it doesn't have to just be bodies against each other, but how do we connect, especially in this era where Zoom is the only way that most of us connect. And so it's, would we like to get together? We talked about the fact that we both miss bro hugs. Yeah, that's nice, but we can't have that. And so we can't go meet up with people, 1,000 people for a conference, but people still want to connect.
Yeah.
And so now it's up to us to figure out the ways that people can connect in the world that we live in. So don't give me an excuse for why we can't create. create for the world in which you live. Mm. The world in which you live is a world that can't connect physically, but the world in which you live is a world that still wants connection. So figure it the fuck out, period. That is why, as events industry professionals, that's why we exist, to figure out ways to connect people with brands, ideals, and other people to promote them forward.
Yeah.
And so if the tools that we have normally had at our disposal are no longer available, that is not an excuse to not, that is not an excuse so that you no longer have to provide points of connection. It just means you have to think differently about how you connect people. And so we started looking at, how have we connected people physically?
Yeah.
What would the digital, virtual, online correlation of that be? I heard someone say once recently that we don't talk about virtual events or real events. We talk about online events and offline events. So how do we create the IRL experience online? How do we create elements of the offline experience online? So that's what we've been focused on. So we have done virtual conferences. We're in the middle of one right now, actually, yeah. One that ends this week. And then right after we finish this one, we roll in to load in for another one on Monday. And then right after we load in for that one, we execute another one that Sunday. And then right after we execute that one, we execute another one the following Monday. And then right after that, we execute another one 2 weeks later.
Woo! Lord, have mercy. Ham mercy.
Ham mercy. This is the hands down, unequivocally, no questions asked, best year for the event nerd in the history of the event nerd. And the best year for the event nerd has happened in Q3 and Q4. So hear me. The best year for the company has happened in Q3 and Q4 of this year.
Let's put this in context. The best year in the history of Event Nerd since 2012, because that's when it got started, has happened in the middle of the largest pandemic, the biggest economic slowdown, the most jobs lost in a certain period of time that the American public has seen since we started actually tracking these numbers.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Between so our first event kicked off today, between today and December, conservatively,
yeah,
we are putting 75 people back to work.
Lilo J. Demonte Daniel from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Brooklyn, it's exciting and humbling.
Down. This is so amazing, man, because what a story. What a story. You know what our good friend Michael Sorrell says?
That the creativity about opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity is when you are forced to come up with when you are forced to confront something that you were denied. Creativity is creating something when you've been denied something. And that's exactly what this is.
Yeah. Yeah. Fired, and just like a phoenix, you rise from the ashes. I think that's a really powerful story, though, man. Because you know, I also I just want to tell you, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You know, because a lot of people respond differently when they get knocked down.
Yeah.
Some people would say getting fired from your consistent job during the middle of a pandemic,
benefits, all the things
that could be qualified as getting knocked down.
Yeah.
But you just told me what your gross revenue number is. I'm not going to repeat right now. And I was like, is that the last 3 years? And you're like, no, that's the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And wow, bro. Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's, I told my client the other day, I said, I need you to understand the event that you're doing is putting, for your event alone, you're putting between 40 and 50 people back to work. As in, you're putting 40, 50 people back to work in an industry that has not worked for 5 months, 6 months. These are people who don't have 401ks. These are people who don't have salaries. These are people that live paycheck to paycheck and have families.
Yeah.
These are people who I love and I'm excited about this work that we're doing because we're creating experiences for people. We're connecting people with moments that matter. And we're putting food on tables.
That's something.
That's something.
That's really something. Proud of you, man.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Thank you.
Damani, what's your definition of creativity?
I didn't fill out one of our own forms.
You didn't. And you knew I was going to hit you with this.
I did. Creativity. I mean, I think that Dr. Sorrell had a very accurate description.
Yeah.
Creativity is the thing that you do when you don't know what else to do, but you have to solve for something. That can be how you parent your kids.
Yeah.
That can be how you come up with a podcast idea. That can be how you draw. Because I used to never think that I was creative because I don't draw or paint or any of that.
Yeah.
Creativity is the thing that you do in between the other things that you do that make the things that you do worthwhile.
That's dope. That's what I said. Yeah. You'll never repeat it exactly like that again.
Never, not one time. I'm just going to play that on record.
But we recorded it, so we'll write it down. That's dope, man. Dope. Hey, we have come to the very important.
So who does the theme song for this?
No, this is. Let me get into this. We're about to have like an actual conundrum right here, and I don't even know how we're gonna fix it. So we're gonna try. Here's what happened. We're about to come to our favorite segment, your favorite segment, if you're a listener out there to Casually Creative, something that we like to do that gets the juices going, popping off, hot fire, bra bra bra, pow pow pow. Quickly creative. We say things very fast.
You've done that one before. That was weak.
No, that was different. It was different.
Barely.
Things very fast is actually a new line. That's not what I said in the last time.
And you did say the quickest part of our show. That's fair.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you ready?
Let's go. Probably not.
Quickly creative starts in 3, 2, 1. Damani. Which thing do you care less about, football or basketball?
Yes.
Most underrated superhero?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Elongated Man.
Man, why?
I don't know. Why? No, actually, I take it back.
Okay.
Static,
most underrated superhero.
Black superhero.
Go ahead.
Wasn't it from the inner city? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Static.
You're just defining yourself.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Most overrated superhero. Yeah. Don't say Superman. Everybody says Superman. I get it.
No, I'm not gonna say that. All right. Overrated superhero. Phoenix. She's very powerful. I feel you. Like, she's very powerful, but she vacillates between this like superhero, supervillain thing. Yeah. People give her far too much credit. Right. Like, I don't know. I feel like Phoenix is
always emotionally unstable. And I'm not saying she. I'm saying Phoenix, the force, is an emotionally unstable force. Whether it's inhabiting a female or a male host, super. Emotionally unstable and
it's true to
kind of throw off its game.
It's true.
Broadway or Tinseltown?
Broadway, no question.
Cannonball or dip your toe in the water?
I don't like to swim.
That's actually a very stereotypical Black thing of you.
I know. I can. Like, that's where the stereotype ends.
I get it.
I don't like the beach. I don't like the pool. I don't understand why you want to sit by the water. My wife is like, oh, let's go lay out by the water. And I'm like, but why?
Best bow tie. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, best bow tie.
It's Quickly Creative.
I know, but I have so many bow ties.
That's come on, fair. Bro. That's why I said it.
I've got this like blue, purple, green, pink floral one. Okay. And I like it because I can make it work with anything.
All the things. Dope. Biggest regret?
That I didn't realize earlier that I don't have to look like a specific thing to be me, to be Black, to be a Black boy from Brooklyn. That it's okay. I'm gonna tell the story. So
yeah,
we lived with my in-laws for 4.5 months in West Texas, in a town that I've since discovered was a sunset town back in the 50s. And so we were living there and I love my in-laws. They're fantastically beautiful and amazing people. And they live on about 60 something acres. And one day my father-in-law was like, he was going out to water the trees. That's the thing that you do in West Texas because it's so dry. And I was like, I'll do it, Rory. You go hang out. And he was like, you sure? And I was like, yeah. And so I grabbed the Gator, this little farm vehicle, for those who don't know, got in the Gator, drove out to the trees, and I was sitting out there. And in the Gator, it takes about 15 minutes per tree. There were like 10 trees.
Yeah.
Do the math. And so I was sitting out there, and I realized at a moment that I was completely content. I was being country boy out there watering some trees on the back 40, but I had my iPad, my phone as a hotspot, and I was listening to music. I was both city boy, technologically inclined, and country boy watering these trees to take care of the cows. So that was probably my biggest regret, that I didn't realize until later on in life that it's okay to not be the thing. It's okay to not be the stereotype, whatever that means.
Nirvana. Favorite child. I'm kidding.
Byron Sanders.
That's cool. Last one. Best live show you've ever seen.
Oh, that's not even a question. Not even a question.
Okay.
So we, for many years, produced an event for a client at South By. Yeah. And last year, 2019, we had the best musical lineup we've ever had. We had Jacob Banks opening. And this was like a long, he wasn't even the opener. There were like two openers before him.
Dang.
Jacob Banks opening before St. Paul and the Broken Bones. And if you don't know about St. Paul and the Broken Bones, you need to.
Go ahead, tell
him. St. Paul and the Broken Bones is fronted by this short, pudgy, redheaded white dude.
Yeah.
And when I was listening to his music, like just on Spotify, I was like, oh, this dude's groovy. And then I saw his picture and I was like, what the hell just happened here?
Yeah.
But what made it so great, we were at this venue that was like a 300 capacity room, 300 cap room.
Yeah.
He is the white embodiment in so many ways of like James Brown. He has studied James Brown. No question. From his outfit to the way that he dances. At one point in the night, at the end of the night, he walks off the stage. Walks through the crowd.
Yeah.
Walks up and climbs onto the bar and finishes the set from on top of the bar while he's like, just like in it. And I sat there, my mouth agape.
Agape.
And I was just like, this is one of the top five musical moments of my life. You started with Jacob Banks, whose voice is freaking massive.
Yeah.
And then you end with St. Paul and the Broken Bones, which is just this, like, they all met in church. They all from the South.
Yeah, I'm about to go pull this dude down on Spotify, bro.
You don't even know. I want you to text me afterwards.
Okay.
Hands down. That's that night.
Yeah.
Was one of the best musical nights I've ever been a part of. But I will say that's night, but I know I supposed to be quickly. Back in 2018, I got to produce an event that will still stand for time through all time as the best event that I've ever produced.
Okay.
I got to produce an event that featured Jacob Banks again.
Okay.
But the headliner was Queens' own Nas. So Black Boy from Brooklyn, fast forward many, many years,
N-A-Z.
Got to produce a show where Nas was the headliner.
Yeah.
And I got to design the stage that Nas performed on. Yo. I got to do all the production behind Nas's performance.
Yo.
So those two. I know you asked for one, but I gave you two.
Nah, man. Listen, anytime you're gonna, you're gonna bring Nas back. I mean, that's fine. You earn that. Okay.
Yes, sir.
That was quickly creative. That wasn't very quick, but this
not
is Jay Damani Daniel, and I think you know he blessed us with some, I would say some timeless wisdom, man. And a little bit of you kind of walking the walk, you know? A lot of people talk the talk, but you walk the walk. Man, love you, brother. Appreciate
love you. Love
you,
too.
Yeah. Yo, thank you all for riding with us. This has been a good time. It's been a hot time, been hot fire. I know my man Damani's actually got a lot of work that he's going to get back to. You know, this is actually the part where you brag on yourself. You got anything extra you want to talk a little bit about?
I am, but not about work stuff. We talk about work stuff.
Go ahead.
I am the husband to an amazing force of a woman.
Mm.
Heather Daniel.
Heather.
I am the father.
Also our producer. I don't think you mentioned that.
Also our producer. Yeah, yep, that's true. She's the producer of Casually Creative. I am the father to two dynamic, hilarious, amazing Black boys who recognize both their Blackness and their whiteness and live comfortably. And I'm teaching them to live comfortably in both. I am the son to Leslie Ann Daniel, who is a redheaded fireball of dopeness.
Yes.
And the brother to sisters Imani and Sais, and then so many other sisters that they have adopted into our family. So the thing that I brag on is that, remember when I moved to Dallas knowing five people-ish, and by five people knowing them, I mean I had these five cousins.
Right, right.
There is a robust, profound, all-encompassing family that exists in Dallas. Mm-hmm. My whole family lives here. So the number one thing that I can brag about is that I jokingly say that I am three people away from the starting lineup of my family living in Dallas. That's a sports reference.
Wow, the first and those, and last.
Yeah, it's true. And those three people, to some degree, have all committed to moving here in the next 3 to 5 years.
Isn't that cool?
So the thing I can brag about the most is that I left a family to try to figure out who I was and then found a family. And then that family has merged with my actual family to create this amazingly dope Dallas crew that is the Dan fam, Dallas Dan fam.
And all of y'all going to live within like, you know, a quarter square mile of each other.
We live within 6 minutes of each other right now.
Yeah. It's beautiful, man. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yo, man, congratulations on everything.
Thank you,
you're burning it up. You're chopping it up. It's beautiful. Proud, proud, proud of you. Continuing to sing your story and to tell your tale. Jay Damani Daniel, Chief Imaginator of the Event Nerd. Thank you so much, brother, for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank y'all for continuing to tune in week after week.
Week after week. We love you guys. This is Byron Sanders.
Jay Damani Daniel.
Y'all stay dope.
Stay dope.
Casually Creative was produced by Heather Daniel of SweetRebel.com. Its intro and outro music were composed by Ezekiel Daniel and produced by Marcus Reddick and Dean Talbert. Feel free to check us out online at www.casuallycreative.co.
Everyone living is a type of creative. Everyone's got a limit they can create. Some people code them, for some people it's bacon. If you can see it in your mind, you can make it.